Mr. Moore, can you get us started?
Ladies and gentlemen, we're here for public hearings today, and when the council holds public hearings on zoning applications, they are legislative hearings because council uses the information obtained during the hearings to decide whether to adopt an ordinance to amend a comprehensive zoning map in the manner requested by the applicant. Each application shall be announced. The director will provide council with a copy of the minutes from the planning and zoning hearing, and those minutes will be made part of the record along with any exhibits introduced at the planning and zoning hearing. The applicant will be called on to present and explain their application and present testimony in support of their application. Council may question the applicant and their witnesses. After the applicant has presented their case, council will provide an opportunity for anyone else who favors the application to speak. Any persons who are present and oppose the application will be allowed to state the reasons for their opposition. After opposition statements are made, there will be no rebuttal by the applicant, and the hearing will be closed unless council decides to leave the record open. If you intend to speak, you're required to come to the front and stand at the speaker stand and state your name and address before you make a statement. If you represent or speak for a group or organization, please identify who you represent. When you make your statement, please be concise. If you have a written statement, hand it to me or to Mr. Lank, and it will be made part of the record. You are not required to read your written statement. If there is more than one witness for the applicant or more than one person in opposition, please do not repeat points that a prior speaker has already made. All persons in attendance should conduct themselves in an orderly fashion. No applause or other disruptive behavior is permitted. Please do not do anything that distracts from these proceedings. If you have a cell phone, pager, beep, or other telephonic device with you, please take the time now to turn it off or switch it to silent mode. The applicant or other or their representative will not be allowed to question persons who speak in opposition, and persons who are in opposition will not be allowed to question the applicant or their witnesses. At the conclusion of the hearing on each application, council may either approve it, deny it, or defer it to a later date. If the Planning and Zoning Commission deferred action, council will do likewise. Mr. Lank.
Yes, thank you. First application for this afternoon is conditional use number 1813, the application of Saddle Creek, LLC. It's an application to consider the conditional use of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district for professional office space to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Georgetown 100, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 1.08 acres, more or less, lying at the northwest corner of the intersection of Route 9 and Route 30 at Gravel Hill. The Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing on this application on January 28th of 2010. The council has been provided with an exhibit booklet, the same exhibit booklet as submitted to the Planning and Zoning Commission. We heard comments from that DLDOT comments were not requested since the use is similar to the previous application for conditional use number 1594. We received comments from the County Engineering Department Utility Planning Division. We heard comments from the Sussex Conservation District. Ben Gordy of Saddle Creek LLC was present with Jim Fuquay, attorney with Fuquay and Urey Professional Association, gave testimony. There were no parties present in support of the application. Jason Moore, an immediate neighbor to the west of the site, was present and stated he was not necessarily in opposition to the application, but requested an 8-foot-high privacy fence be erected along his property line for privacy due to the hours of the operation proposed. At conclusion of the public hearing, Mr. Johnson stated he would move that the commission recommend approval of conditional use number 1803 for Saddle Creek LLC for professional office use based upon a record made at a public hearing and for the following reasons. One, the site was previously approved as a conditional use for an office sales center. This use will be similar but with a slightly broader scope, allowing general professional office use within the existing structure. Two, the proposed conditional use is appropriate in this location at the intersection of Route 30 and Route 9. Three, the project with the conditions and stipulations placed upon it will not have an adverse impact on neighboring properties, community, or traffic. Four, existing uses in the vicinity include a restaurant, furniture store, Del Dot service yard, and other business uses along Route 9. 5, the use as professional offices benefits the health, safety, and welfare of Sussex County residents and will provide professional offices in a convenient location at the intersection of Route 9 and Route 30. 6, this recommendation for approval is subject to the following conditions and stipulations. A, there will only be one lighted sign on the premise that shall not exceed 32 square feet on each side. B, any security lights shall only be installed on the building and shall be screened so that they do not shine on neighboring properties or roadways. C, as proposed by the applicants, the hours of operation shall be limited to between 7 a.m. and 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday. D, a landscape buffer or fence with a minimum height of 6 feet shall be maintained along all boundaries with adjacent residential properties. The type and height of the buffer or fence shall be depicted on final site plan. E, the use shall be located within the existing two-story building. F, the applicant must comply with all Del Dot requirements concerning the entrance and roadway improvements. G, the use shall be limited to business and professional uses, including but not limited to medical offices, dental offices, lawyers, accountants, insurance offices, etc. There shall not be any contractors' offices or uses that primarily involve retail sales. H, all parking shall be confined to the rear of the property. I, the final site plan shall include a landscape plan for the property. J, the site plan shall be subject to the approval of the Planning and Zoning Commission. Was the motion second carried unanimously to forward this application to council with the recommendation that the application be approved for the reasons and with the conditions and stipulations stated. And that motion carried 5-0. I received no additional comments from any individual or agency to date since that public hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Lank. Are there any questions from council? If not, Mr. Fuquay.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Deaver, gentlemen. For the record, my name is Jim Fuquay. I'm an attorney here in Georgetown. I represent the applicant, Saddle Creek LLC, and with me is Ben Gordy. There was a small exhibit document submitted, which I assume you all have copies of. This is a conditional use application to use an existing building for professional offices. The site is located at the northwest intersection of Route 9 and Route 30, which is Gravel Hill Road. The site contains 1.08 acres and has frontage on both Route 9 and Route 30. The property is improved with an attractive two-story wood frame building. There's a photo of the building in Exhibit C. And if you travel on Route 9, I think you're probably familiar with the site. The appearance of the building as it is today will remain the same. Nothing's going to be changed. The building and site were approved for conditional use as a model home and sales center in 2005. And that was for use with several residential developments that were being built by Ocean Atlantic. A copy of that conditional use approval is in Exhibit D in the booklet. That use is no longer needed since sales offices are now located in the developments that were using this as a sales office. And this application is to allow the property to be used as professional offices for a doctor, lawyer, engineers, or similar type professions. The property has an on-site well and an on-site septic system. The entrance is located on Route 30. There is no entrance on Route 9, and there will not be an entrance on Route 9. Parking is currently provided to the rear of the property, including one handicap spot. The site is in the Georgetown Volunteer Fire Department coverage area. We proposed, as part of the conditions of this approval, with which the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended that the use would be limited to professional offices. There would be no contractor's office or retail sales. The maximum hours of operation would be 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday. There would be one lit sign, which would be a maximum of 32 square feet on each side. That's and there would be a landscape buffer or fence maintained along the boundary line of the site with the adjacent residential properties. The site itself is currently zoned AR1, as is the property to the west of the site. However, if you refer to Exhibit B in the exhibit packet, which is a zoning map of the area, you can see that the All the other properties, basically, along both sides of Route 9 in this area are zoned C1 general commercial. On that exhibit, the areas near the site that are outlined in green are actually the Del Dot Workyard at Gravel Hill and the two existing borrow pits that are located on both the north and the south side of Route 9. Just west of the site is the Beshe Furniture Stores, and then along Route 9 there are a number of different businesses and contractor sites currently existing. Directly across from the property at the intersection and located at the southwesterly intersection is a Mexican restaurant and parking lot, and that site is also a zone C1 general commercial. As Mr. Lang stated, the Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend approval of the application subject to 10 conditions. One of those conditions included a 6-foot buffer or fence along the boundaries of the property with the adjacent residential properties, which was the request of the neighbor who did appear at the hearing. All the conditions are acceptable to the applicant, and in light of the existing zoning in the area, the existing commercial uses in the area, and subject to the conditions recommended by the Planning and Zoning Commission, we believe that the conditional use for professional offices is in character with the area and will not have any adverse effect on adjacent properties. And we're requesting your approval of the conditional use, and we'll be happy to answer any questions you might have. And that will conclude our presentation.
Okay. Are there any questions from council? If not, do you have anyone that is here speaking in behalf of the application?
We have nothing further to present.
Is there anyone in attendance who'd like to speak on behalf of the applicant? Seeing none, is there anyone in opposition? Anyone in opposition? Seeing none, Mr. President, I think that at this point it would be appropriate to close the record.
Without objection, we'll consider the record closed. Does council have any further discussions before I ask our attorney to read the title? Mr. Moore.
Thank you, Mr. President. An ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for a professional office space to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Georgetown 100, Sussex County, containing 1.08 acres, more or less, with the following conditions. There will only be one lighted sign on the premises that shall not exceed 32 square feet on each side. B, any security lights shall only be installed on the building and shall be screened so they do not shine on neighboring properties or roadways. As proposed by the applicants, the hours of operation shall be limited to 7 a.m. and 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday. D, a landscape buffer or fence with a minimum height of 6 feet shall be maintained along all boundaries with adjacent residential properties. The type and height of the buffer or fence shall be depicted on the final site plan. E, the use shall be located within the existing two-story building. F, the applicants must comply with all DLDOT requirements concerning the entrance and roadway improvements. G, the use shall be limited to business and professional uses, including but not limited to medical offices, dental offices, lawyers, accountants, insurance offices, etc. There shall not be any contractors' offices or uses that primarily involve retail sales. H, all parking shall be confined to the rear of the property. I, the final site plan shall include a landscape plan for the property. J, the site plan shall be subject to the approval of the Planning and Zoning Commission. And that is the ordinance with the conditions.
Okay. Any comments from council?
Was there a reason, Mr. Fuquay, that I see that one of the neighbors asked for an 8-foot high fence? And it says a 6, there reason you didn't go 8 feet? Of that?
It'd be illegal. 6 foot is maximum.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. All right. I'll entertain a motion to approve conditional use 1813.
I'll make a motion.
Is there a second, please?
Second.
Motion second to approve the application of Saddle Creek LLC, conditional use 1813, with the conditions as read by our county attorney. Any further discussion? If not, we'll take the vote. Ms. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Articulate reasons for your vote, please.
For me, I didn't either. Based on the findings of the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Mr. Wilson?
Ditto. Same thing.
Mr. Cole?
Yes, it's had a history of commercial activity there in the office
offices were a similar use as before, so I move yes.
Mr. Vincent?
It's certainly a commercial activity around the site, and it's based on recommendation of planning and zoning. I vote yes.
It's appropriate use. I vote yes. Motion carried.
Thank you.
The next item is conditional use number 1857. It's the application of Delmarva Power and Light Company to consider the conditional use of land in a GR general residential district for an electrical substation to be located on certain parcel land lying being in Broadkill 100, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 8.04 acres more or less, lying west of Route 258, also known as Hudson Road, approximately 1,600 feet north of Route 9. Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing on this application on January 28th. For the benefit of council, I passed down copies of an exhibit booklet just provided by the applicants. The same exhibit booklet that was provided to council on January 15th, 2010. We heard comments at the commission public hearing from DelDOT, the County Engineering Department Utility Planning Division, Sussex Conservation District. They are a part of my report. Shannon Carmine, attorney with Sergovic and Carmine Professional Association, was present with several representatives of DP&L, or Delmarva Power and Light Company, and gave testimony. Three speakers who spoke in opposition or expressed concerns in reference to noise already heard from power lines, concerned about flooding and water runoff. The trees are already dying and the project will lack screening, that a gate is needed to prevent trespass into the substation. There are concerns about electromagnetic fields, that the site should be closer to Route 9. They hate to see the trees cut down. They have heard that a third transmission line is proposed to be installed and that they are concerned about the impact on their property values and that the noise level should be monitored. At the conclusion of the public hearing before the Planning and Zoning Commission, the commission did defer action and have yet to make a recommendation for this application. I received no additional comments from any individual agencies since, other than we did authorize the approval of a 2-acre additional parcel to this property for the purpose of stormwater management only.
And what are the communities on surrounding on the north side?
The property to the north is referred to as Lazy Lake. Uh-huh. It's a subdivision that's existed since late 70s. And the property to the west is called Hunter's Mill. And it has existed since the late 80s, probably.
Thank you.
Mid to late 80s.
Hey, do you have anything else, Mr. Lang?
No, that's all I have. Thank you.
Questions from council? If not, Ms. Carmine?
Thank you.
How come I was out electric 3 days last week?
I think the weather is to blame for that one, unfortunately.
Blame Mother Nature.
And timing on this happened.
Mother Nature.
I had electric. It didn't bother me one day.
Me too. I have the co-op, though.
For the record, my name is Shannon Carmine. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Sergovic and Carmine, located here in Georgetown, Delaware. I represent the applicant, Delmarva Power and Light Company, who's applied for a conditional use of land in a GR district in order to construct and maintain a substation. Also in attendance this afternoon on behalf of Delmarva Power are Mr. Ken Yusup, professional engineer with the engineering firm of Morris and Ritchie Associates. Mr. Yusup will discuss the engineering aspects of the reliability project. And we also have Mr. Jim Smith. He is a senior public affairs manager for Delmarva Power. He will make a brief PowerPoint presentation on the proposed use of the property. And Dr. William H. Bailey, he's a scientist in the field of bioelectromagnetics, whose attendance was requested by Delmarva Power in order to update the council and the public about the latest research on electric and magnetic fields, which are more commonly referred to as EMF, as it may be relevant to this application. We also have in attendance this afternoon various individuals or representatives of Delmarva Power in the audience who will be available to address any questions or concerns that the council may have, which may require more specialized knowledge or expertise. This specific project is referred to as the Cool Spring Reliability Project, and this project is in response to the growing population in Sussex County, and it's necessary to meet the operational, economic, and reliability requirements for Delmarva Power. If approved, the substation will enhance and maintain Delmarva Power's ability to provide reliable power to its customers in this area. In support of this application, as Mr. Lank had stated, we did submit a booklet for the council's consideration and review. The booklet does include a copy of the application, the conditional use plan, the elevation, a wetlands delineation, the DelDOT traffic summary, the deed and description of lands, a copy of a PowerPoint presentation prepared by Delmarva Power, and the statement of compliance with the zoning code and comprehensive plan, and a proposed finding of facts. Although you may hear some discussion with regard to the transmission lines, that discussion is for informational purposes only. Those transmission lines are already in existence and are not part of this application. Rather, this application seeks only permission to construct and maintain the substation. At this point in the presentation, I'd like to invite Mr. Ken Youssef, again, professional engineer with the engineering firm of Morrison Ritchie Associates, to address the council to discuss the engineering aspects of this reliability project. Mr. Youssef?
Thank you. As Mr. Lank, I'm going to go ahead and step over to the board. Stated earlier, the project is located just north of Route 9 off of Hudson Road, which is over on the right-hand side of the page in the exhibit that you have in your booklet. The property is bordered on the north by the Lazy Lake community, to the west by the Hunter's Mill subdivision, to the south by a residue parcel that was actually part of this piece of land that was formerly owned by Delmarva Power that's owned by Wilkinson Holdings. And on the east, by a number of single-family residences that extend along Hudson Road in the vicinity of the project. The property is 8.04 acres, which is this portion of the site right here. As Mr. Lang stated, the applicant has a contract to purchase an additional 2 acres that we're using to enhance the design of the project, and I'll come to that back to that in a moment. So we'll be adding an additional 2 acres, but this is the portion that's related to the conditional use application. There's an existing 25-foot frontage on Hudson Road, a portion of which is occupied by some of the monumental entrance features of the Lazy Lake community. An agreement was entered into in the early 70s that provided for shared access and shared use of the road. A portion of the access road, East Lake Drive, is on the Delmarva Power property presently, and the agreement provides for access off of that drive to the property, so we will not need a DelDOT entrance for the access to the community. As they stated, there are no wetlands on the property, and the entire site that we're looking at is forested. The canopy of the trees is at about elevation 100. It's above the top of the transmission line poles that are adjacent to it, and about 60 to 65 foot tall. Access to the site is by a gravel access drive that will be coming off of East Lake Drive to a fenced substation enclosure. The entire enclosure will be surrounded by an 8 foot tall chain link fence that will have privacy screening. For your convenience, I brought a copy of some images of the screening material that will be used for the fence.
Thank you.
Basically, it looks like a synthetic evergreen screen material that will be used and interlaced in the wire fencing to enhance the visual aspects of the design. In addition, the agreement allowed us to move the entrance, which would have come through the narrow portion of our property here, extending from the main road, allowed us to pull that further away from the property, enhancing the design and allowing us to provide some additional screening to the Lazy Lake community to the north. On this plan, which is a landscape plan based on community input, we're showing that right now, again, we have very large trees with kind of an open understory, kind of like a park effect with a few scattered hollies and other evergreens underneath. We're going to do some infilling with understory trees and along the property line to the north, again, to enhance and minimize any visual effects of the project, as well as over on the Hunter's Mill side. The existing transmission lines are over on the west side of the property. The homes on Hunter's Mill are even further to the west from that. We'll be bringing the electric transmission lines into the property, into the substation enclosure area at the northwest corner and the southwest corner of the site. So there will be some clearing of trees there to facilitate tying those lines in. But we'll be maintaining a forested buffer around the remaining portion of the property. We put our stormwater management facility over on the additional property that we purchased. What that's allowing us to do is to maintain more of the existing forest vegetation around the substation site. And again, we believe that that's a significant enhancement to the design.
Is your possible purchase of that additional land going to be part of this application?
It's not technically part of the application, right? Because
we can't really consider that, then, can we, Mr.?
Well, stormwater is permitted.
No, I'm talking about the land south of the existing or the drawn-in right-of-way access road. You're talking about buying additional land just south of your proposed access road.
Yeah, the purpose of that is for a driveway, which is my understanding is a permitted use, and the stormwater management facilities,
which
would be a permitted.
Right, but that's not really part of this application.
No.
Because you haven't really, you know, finished. That's not really a done deal, right?
No, it is. Delmarva Power has a contract on that piece of property.
Oh, you have a contract, but you haven't bought it. Okay, thank you.
Do you have a drainage to this stormwater management? Or is it just water going to run to it and stay there as a pond?
Morris and Ritchie Associates and our geotechnical subcontractor have done detailed soils testing. The proposed stormwater management facility is an infiltration basin. The design that we propose to infiltrate, and it has the capacity to infiltrate the 100-year storm, which exceeds all the minimum standards significantly.
But it has no way of drainage other than just going into the pond and stop.
You mean overflow, Sam?
Yeah, so that ditch drain out
into a ditch or something.
Well, right now, the way the property drains, there's a low area here in the woods, and so the bulk of the substation site right now, in the existing condition, drains down to this low area and soaks into the ground, all the runoff that comes from it right now today. There's also another low area over here that takes other portions of the site and the Wilkinson property that are very, very sandy soils with a very high infiltration rate. So the state law requires us not to collect all the water and take it onto somebody else's property. We're supposed to mimic the conditions that exist out there today. So our design does that. We bring the water down to the area where there is the existing natural low area, and we're managing it there.
In other words, no homes, nothing down the other end to put that water on, right? On down at the east end of it.
If we were to have several hundred-year storms back-to-back.
Well, we just had one. I can show you one of the last. This storm management, I can take you to a pond right today, does not work because it has no ditch to carry the water from that pond to somewhere else.
Well, we do. There is.
And it's flooded all the neighbors and everyone else, and the water, it raised the springs too high in that pond. See, that's where the problem. And this is all on sandy soil. I'm talking about, this is actually one of the higher places in Sussex County we had this flood. Mm-hmm. And I'm part of it. And now we've got to go with a ditch drainage or some kind of way, eliminate that flooding that's in a humongous pond. And so this storm water management, to me, it's not your fault, but it's the state has screwed this up way up the road. Over calling it, it sounds good on paper, but it's actually worthless and better off they never saw it. It'd be better off if you never had this storm water pond here. Because instead of having this pond here, have the land up higher to suck this water up, take it up as a sponge, you've lowered it. And so that just comes groundwater in here and fills this pond over, and then it floods on down the road here. And I'm wondering who you're going to flood down the road here is what I'm looking at.
Well, if I may, I think I've got a way to address hopefully most of your concerns. I may not satisfy all of them. The entire yard area is 8 inches of loose gravel, which is going to promote a lot of infiltration by itself now. In addition to that, the state minimum requirements for the stormwater management design require you to, if you're using an infiltration practice, to take what they call a 10-year recurrent storm event, and they want you to infiltrate it over a 24-hour period. What we're doing is we're saying that we can infiltrate the 100-year storm, over a 48-hour period. We're able, with our design here, to infiltrate the 100-year storm, which is significantly greater than the 10-year storm, over a 24-hour period. That's the design criteria. That's why we're using the larger area here. So we're far exceeding the requirements. In addition, we provided an emergency overflow here. Again, we're not going to be dumping a lot of water on adjacent properties or into the pond. We provided emergency overflow that's going to be in an open wooded area that's naturally low anyway, like it is today. So I'm confident. And then the other thing is we did the soil testing within the last couple months during the most significant wet season I've ever seen. It's not like we did it a couple years ago when we had different conditions. We did our testing and infiltration and the depth of groundwater evaluation now during the worst conditions. So I'm confident that we have a very conservative design. We've gone way beyond any of the minimum state requirements to satisfy it. And again, we have the added benefit of all the gravel that's permeable through the whole yard area. So I hope that's helpful with your comment.
With all due respect, you won't have the trees that they're existing right now.
That's correct.
Yeah, and I don't know how you can say that you would have to mimic what you have now. You would have to have the trees. I think I don't know if you could compare trees, what trees can do, to 8 inches of gravel. But be that as it may.
There's a real clear methodology that's set out. It's a national standard methodology, and that's what I have to follow as an engineer. What I'm able to convey to you is that we far and exceed all of the minimum requirements. So,
to someone else's opinion.
Excuse me?
To someone else's opinion.
Yes, sir.
I understand.
Thank you, Mr. Youssef. At this point in time, I'd like to introduce Mr. Jim Smith. He's the Senior Public Affairs Manager for Delmarva Power. He will be making the PowerPoint presentation. Thank you.
Did you bring all these people with you? My goodness.
Well, thank you, Shannon. Before I start, I just briefly, when I talked to Mr. Baker in the hallway, and I know there were some references to the I guess almost a triple whammy storm that we have recently had, and we worked very closely with Mr. Baker and Joe Thomas over at the EOC, and once again, I think the county did a marvelous job in providing leadership during the storm. We had a lot of communication with all levels of government, and the EOC in here is top-notch in Sussex, and we all had to work together through, and I don't think we were alone. I know I live on the co-op and was out for a couple days, so we all...
Did you have electric?
No, we were all for 2 days, yeah, so we, it was, I think we all bore some of the burden there, but kudos to the county for good work. What I'm going to briefly go through to avoid redundancy, and I say briefly, this is a presentation that essentially we gave at a public meeting back in early December. We sent about 300-plus letters out to folks that live in Lazy Lake, Hunter's Mill, Hudson Road, and anybody who was really in the neighborhood, if you will, of this substation. And unfortunately, we didn't get a great turnout for that presentation. I think we had four or five folks that showed up, and we had some good dialogue with those folks. But I just wanted to give you, in layman's terms, kind of a brief overview of what these folks saw and heard from Delmarva in regards to this project. That just gives you an overview of us as a company serving all of Delaware and the Eastern Shore of Maryland, half a million electric customers. The scope of the Cool Spring Reliability Project basically is to create a diverse path of power during times of peak demand and emergency conditions. It addresses the projected risk of an overload condition on that part of our system. It improves long-term reliability, which is something that, you know, we work on all the time. This 230 to 69 kV, or 230,000 kilovolts to 69,000 kilovolts, this substation project will help maintain reliability for customers in eastern and central Sussex County by increasing carrying capacity and supporting voltage along our transmission system. We not only serve our substations from our transmission lines, we also feed the co-op substations as well. Delmarva Power spends a lot of time of planning the system and looking futuristically 5 and 10 years down the road, but we don't do that alone. Delmarva and the other transmission owners throughout the region have to work with PJM Interconnection, which essentially is the regional grid operator and oversees or ensures that we have a robust transmission system. And they have identified this upgrade as necessary, as they quoted, to meet the operational, economic, and reliability requirements of our system. So it enhances and maintains our ability to provide reliable power to our customers in this area. It improves our voltage carrying capacity of our transmission system, and it accommodates about a 2.3% load growth that we have seen in this area compared to just over 2% that we've seen in the whole service territory. I thought this would be good to show you just from an electrical perspective how our system works, and you know, the storm was a good example. I know we did a lot of talking with folks during the storm about how our system works. You know, the power is generated from whatever generation facility. It goes into a step-up transformer. It's carried along high-voltage transmission lines. We talk about transmission lines. Those are usually the larger lines that carry electricity over long distances. And then they tap into substations, the fenced-in areas, which essentially take the high voltage, step it down to the lower voltage to our distribution system, which runs here in the town and along a lot of our roadways here before it gets to the end user, the customer. So that's kind of where the substation fits in the puzzle. A few details about the substation. As you've heard, it's Route 9 just west of Hudson Road. It's going to step down voltage from 230,000 volts to 69,000 volts. We have a pair of 230 kV lines that are already in place there. Those lines will tap into the substation, and then they will continue along the existing 69 kV transmission line, which currently runs along Route 9, which, as I'm sure as many of you know, we just recently rebuilt from Harbison down to the co-op's Lank substation. There will be a small portion of our 69 kV line that will come from Route 9, and it'd be overhead for a portion before it gets, to the corner of any of the properties at Hunter's Mill. It will tap off underground, actually into the fenced-in area of the substation. We've owned the parcel since 1977, and we find that we do own parcels throughout the entire peninsula as we look futuristically to have possible build-out to improve reliability. Mr. Lank had mentioned audible noise that was brought up during the planning and zoning. We designed the substation to comply with all federal and state regulations. It's typically in the 50 to 60 decibel range, which if you look in a variety of sources, that's like moderate conversation, kind of a dull hum, if you will. We noticed after the Planning and Zoning Committee meeting that evening, there was kind of a dull hum coming out of the electrical box here in the lobby, and that's kind of what it sounds like. This gives you an idea of just a typical substation, what it looks like, the bus work, lines coming in. We have things like transformers, which actually physically step down the voltage, circuit breakers. These substations also have control rooms. Mr. Yusuf said that we would be doing a fencing around there, the fence screening.
Can I ask you a question about that?
Yes.
Could you consider upgrading? I mean, that is so unattractive.
This is an existing substation, and we'll look into
like
some of the latest and I don't know if there are any other options.
Do you have to have something like this?
We don't have to, but I know folks, you know, sometimes request that.
You're up against neighborhoods here.
Right. Well, one of the things, you had mentioned trees, one of the things, even though we will have to take out trees for this project, we are going to be, you know, replacing some vegetation, you know, lower growth buffers around. And we're also, you know, folks in our group have looked at see what type of native species are there. There are a lot of white pines. We talked to the State Forestry Department. So we'll be, you know, putting some white pines back in there. Not near the lines, of course, but at least around the perimeters.
Just don't let them fall on the plant.
That's right. We want to keep them away from them. We saw a little bit of that during the storm. This was the time frame that we gave the public, basically, that we were going to be going through what we're doing now, the conditional use process, during fourth quarter of last year, first quarter of this year. Site clearing February, March, foundations and structures March to May, major construction, you know, as we approach mid-year with hopefully in-service date in June. And, of course, these were just estimates. And that's basically what we presented to the public. We thought it was important to show you folks, you know, from a layman's point of view, from a customer's point of view, what type of information that we provided them. We tried to be as proactive as we could in having that public meeting, but wanted you to have an idea of just what those folks saw that night.
And did you have any follow-up meetings with civic associations?
We had, I think, five people that showed up to the meeting, and one gentleman actually left before the meeting because we had answered whatever his question was. And we did, gave out business cards and said if there was any, you know, opportunity for another forum, whether it's, you know, civic association, homeowners association, we'd be more than happy to meet with them. Never really heard any, okay, you know, more from those folks, mm-hmm, though.
And you've owned this property, it appeared
since
to me, for quite a long,
yes,
time.
Yes, since 77.
And your plans have always been to do a substation pretty much there? I mean, why did you buy it?
Typically when you see a parcel of that size, that usually tells you that there could be a chance to have a substation there. It was ideally located near a transmission line. The one transmission line that runs north-south there, the 230 line, has been there since the early to mid-70s. And then we added a second one, I believe in 2004, we completed that work. So that's.
So the residents in that area have been familiar with Delmarva owning this property, or should have been, I guess, for many years.
Well, yeah, we've had it for, you know, over 30 years, so.
And it wouldn't be practical. I mean, I heard what Mr. Lank said, that there was a one comment at planning and zoning that you should be closer to Route 9. And you know, at this point, you own that whole piece up to Route 9, is that right?
Well, we at one time we did own some more of the parcel that extends, mm-hmm, out to Route 9,
mm-hmm,
and we did sell a portion of the land that we own, you know, back to the substation. Wilkinson bought that from us a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have substations in towns. We have them, mm-hmm, in, you know, along Route 9. We actually have a
right
substation right down the road, the Harbison substation.
Yes.
The co-op has the Lank substation. Some of them are right on the roadway. Some of them are nestled a little bit further back.
The Lank substation. Okay.
That's right.
Yes, that's
you know that one well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All righty. Any other questions? Turn it over to Dr. Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. At this point in time, I'd like to introduce Dr. William H. Bailey. He's a scientist in the field of bioelectromagnetics. Dr. Bailey?
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is William H. Bailey. Our office address is at 17,000 Science Drive, Bowie, Maryland. I'm a principal scientist in the Center for Exposure Assessment and Dose Reconstruction and Exponent. I'm also a visiting scientist at the Cornell University Medical School, and I've had 25 years of research and study in the field of bioelectromagnetics. And I have my PhD from the City University of New York. I did my thesis research at the Rockefeller University in New York and completed 2 years of additional fellowship training from the National Institute of Health in neurochemistry. The reason I was asked to come to the meeting and here today was to answer any questions that people may have about the status of research on electric and magnetic fields. Because of my background and experience, I've often been asked to work with the National Institute of Health, the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences,
the Department of Energy, and multiple state and provincial agencies. So, for example, I was an advisor to the Maryland Department of Natural Resources and the staff of the Public Utility Commission on the health and safety aspects of a high-voltage transmission line. I was also more recently asked to work with a variety of international organizations, including the World Health Organization. Now, electric and magnetic fields are all around us, so wherever we are. The sources of these fields are inside of buildings, wiring, currents flowing on water pipes, wiring, appliances, motors, in our schools and workplaces as well, and also outdoors in terms of distribution lines that run down our streets and also transmission lines. In this project, the power is coming down the existing transmission lines and going to be extended up distance at 66 kV and then go underground and come into the substation. So basically what's happening is that these power from the high voltage transmission lines is being tapped, and that power is being brought into the substation. And it was mentioned before, the purpose of the substation is to convert that electricity to a lower voltage where it can be then distributed throughout our communities. So the major sources of the fields are in fact the existing lines and not the substation. And the reason for that is for the equipment in the substation to operate efficiently, you have to contain the fields within the sources. The conversion process of going from high voltage to low voltage, for instance, in a transformer, would not be effective unless all that magnetic flux density was contained within the transformer. What this means is when you go to the surface of the transformer, you can measure a high magnetic field, but you walk 10 feet away from that transformer, the field has already dropped to a low background level. So the substation itself will not be a significant source of fields in the area. Now, electric and magnetic fields are a topic of scientific research that has been going on for decades. Numerous state and federal and international agencies have reviewed the research on this. None of these agencies have concluded that these fields are cause of any adverse health effect. Several organizations, including one that I'm a member of, have recommended standards internationally. There's an organization in Europe, there's one here in the US, and the fields from the substation, of course, and the transmission lines are all well below those existing standards. So I'd be happy to answer any other questions that may come up.
So you say that within 10 feet of the facility, that actually beyond 10 feet, that you're pretty safe and you're not going to be harmed. The person would not be harmed.
The example I gave was 10 feet was the transformer, mm-hmm. which is the main principal piece of equipment within the substation.
In the substation area.
So that's quite a distance from the boundary. So certainly you would not see anything from the substation. The measurements that we make around substations and calculations show that for substations, the main sources of fields are the lines that are going in and out of the substations and not the equipment within the substation itself.
And those are the lines that run behind Hunter's Mill? Those are the lines that are coming in?
The lines are coming in.
I think I've seen them.
Here. Mm-hmm. Coming in, tapping mm-hmm. off here.
Okay.
And then coming back.
Yeah, those lines. Here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we're just taking part of the power mm-hmm. from those existing lines, routing it into the substation where part of it's drawn off and then converted to a lower voltage for distribution in the area.
So is my cell phone safe? I'm just kidding.
different frequency, entirely different phenomena, cell phones than power lines. So that means that you can use your cell phone underneath the transmission line, and there's no interference. And the interactions of the fields and the cell phone are quite different than they are from our household appliances.
That doesn't sound good to you.
Doesn't matter. I'm going to use it anyhow.
Were there any other questions of counsel of
this
witness?
My question is probably is to the somebody who just spoke is, what safety features do we have to keep children from getting in there? But that would be somebody for someone else.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Carmine?
We do have some substation and transmission folks, but essentially, much like the Harbison substation down the road, 8-foot fenced-in area. We take security and safety very seriously in our industry, so there will be, you know, a locked gate, you know, at all times there, and very tough to access, you know, those substations.
You can always put electric fence on top of it.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. At this point, I'd like to discuss this project's compliance with the zoning code and the comprehensive plan. Again, we're seeking a conditional use of land in a GR district in order to construct and maintain a substation. The conditional use of land consists of approximately 8.04 acres and has been owned by Delmarva Power since 1977. The purpose of the reliability project, again, is to meet the energy needs of Delmarva Power's customers and to enable Delmarva Power to better serve the rapidly expanding population. The zoning code provides that the purpose of the GR district is to provide for medium-density residential use, including all mobile homes. However, the following uses may be permitted as a conditional use when approved in accordance with the provisions of Article 24, and those uses include public utilities or public service uses, buildings, generating or treatment plants, pumping or regulator stations and substations, but not telephone central offices. The zoning code further provides that the purpose of a conditional use is to provide for certain uses which cannot be well adjusted to their environment in particular locations with full protection offered to surrounding properties by the rigid application of the district regulations. And these uses are generally of a public or a semi-public character and are essential and desirable for the general convenience and welfare. But because of the nature of the use, the importance of the relationship to the comprehensive plan, and the possible impact not only on neighboring properties but on a large section of the county, require the exercise of planning judgment on location and site plan. The use that Delmarva Power seeks to get approval for is of a semi-public character. It's not only essential and desirable for the general convenience and welfare of the residents in Sussex County who receive their electric needs from Delmarva Power, but it's necessary according to the grid operator. Therefore, the proposed use does meet the purpose of a conditional use as it's defined by the zoning code. The proposed use is also consistent with the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan. The future land use plan identifies the property as being in the mixed residential area. Although the primary uses envisioned in the mixed residential area are residential, the mixed residential area does not prohibit non-residential uses, especially when such use is identified as a permitted and anticipated conditional use under the Sussex County Zoning Code. The plan does fail to address non-residential uses such as necessary public utilities, which would include the proposed use of Delmarva Power. However, the proposed use will serve the expanding population, and it will enhance the capacity of the area transmission system to enable Delmarva Power to provide reliable power to their customers in this area. And for those reasons, this project does comply with both the zoning code and the comprehensive plan. In addition, the proposed use will cause no detrimental impact on surrounding properties or neighborhoods. There will be a natural buffer, as discussed earlier, which will be maintained around the property to lessen any visual impact on surrounding properties, and a fence will be erected around the reliability project to prevent entry into the substation. There are also no wetlands on this property, so there will be no disturbing of wetlands. DLDOT has determined that there will be no impact on traffic. Therefore, the proposed conditional use is for the purpose of promoting the health, safety, and welfare of the present and future inhabitants of Sussex County. Based on the record and this presentation this afternoon, we respectfully request that the council approve the applied for conditional use for Delmarva Power. I understand that the Planning and Zoning Commission has deferred a recommendation on this application. It is scheduled to be heard as old business or to be discussed as old business tomorrow afternoon at their meeting. Again, this reliability project is an approved regional transmission expansion plan project, that's been required for June 2010 to enhance and maintain reliability, but also to help mitigate congestion in Sussex County. The June in-service date allows the major construction to occur during the winter months and the spring months, when longer line outages required for construction are available and before the increased summer traffic occurs. As a result, we respectfully request that the council would place this application on their agenda as soon as practically possible. We thank you for your consideration of our requests and, of course, are available for any questions that you may have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there, I see that you brought a large contingent with you.
I did.
would you like to introduce any of the others for the purpose of the record?
Only if there is a question that's posed that may require specialized knowledge or their expertise.
Okay. Is there anyone else that would like to speak in behalf of the applicant? If not, is there anyone in opposition? Anyone in opposition? Seeing none at this point, Mr. President, I think it's appropriate to close the record in this matter.
If there are no objections, the record will be closed. I will need a motion to defer, I believe.
Yes.
Is that correct? And a second, please.
Second.
Motion and a second to defer on the application by Delmarva Power, conditional use 1857. Any discussion? Ms. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Vincent?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. It is deferred.
Thank you. Mr. Lang?
Yes. Excuse me. We have an additional item being change of zone number 1667. It's the application of Wyoming Concrete LLC. It's an application to amend the comprehensive zoning map from an AR1 agriculture residential district to an HI1 heavy industrial district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, for land lying south of Road 380, 600 feet east of US Route 113, also being south of Frankfort and west of the railroad, to be located on 10.47 acres, more or less. The Planning and Zoning Commission held public hearing on this application on January 28th. For the benefit of council, I passed down copies of a small exhibit booklet, which was provided to the commission on January 15th of 2010. Excuse me. During the public hearing on January 28th, we heard comments from DLDOT, the County Engineering Department, Utility Planning Division, Sussex Conservation District. Frank DeMunde of Wyoming Concrete LLC was present with Jim Fuquay, attorney of Fuquay and Urey Professional Association, gave testimony. There were no parties present in support of or in opposition to the application. At the conclusion of the public hearing, Mr. Smith stated he would move that the commission recommend approval of change zone 1667 for Wyoming Concrete LLC for a change in zone from an AR1 agriculture residential district to an HI1 heavy industrial district based upon a record made at the public hearing and for the following reasons. One, the location is appropriate for HI1 zoning. The property is located near US Route 113 between existing HI1 and C1 zoning. It is also adjacent to an existing rail line. The site is also approved for use as a concrete batch plant and concrete masonry yard under a special use exception issued by the Sussex County Board of Adjustment. This rezoning makes the underlying zoning compatible with the existing use. Two, HI1 zoning is appropriate since the zoning code states that the purpose of the HI1 district is to provide for a variety of industrial operations, but to restrict or prohibit those industries which have characteristics likely to produce serious adverse effects within or beyond the limits of the district. Three, the rezoning promotes a local economy. Four, the property is in a developing area according to the county comprehensive land use plan. Five, while an HI1 district has many possible uses, there are only a limited number of uses that are permissible without a further hearing in front of the county board of adjustment. Six, under the HI1 district, if any other possible use is potentially hazardous, or if there is any doubt as to whether it is potentially hazardous, there will be another public hearing on a particular use before the Board of Adjustment. The Board of Adjustment cannot approve the particular use unless it finds that the public health and welfare will be protected and that there are safeguards to protect area waters, property, and people. If the Board decides to approve such a use, it can also add its own conditions or limitations to address that particular use. 7, the HI1 zoning with the safeguards of having further hearings limiting potential uses will not adversely affect the neighboring or adjacent properties. And 8, the applicant has stated that there is presently no desire to change the use from what currently exists on the property. There was a motion and a second carried unanimously to forward this application to council with the recommendation that the application be approved for the reasons stated, and that motion carried 5-0. And I received no additional individual or agency comments to date. And that's all I have, unless you have questions.
Okay. Any questions from council?
And that was coming from the Board of Adjustment?
The Board of Adjustment has approved the batch plant.
Oh, the batch plant part. Okay. All right.
There's a whole list of uses that require Board of Adjustment action.
Right. Okay.
Based on the code.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Seeing no questions prior to the applicant's presentation, just for full disclosure, over the years, I have represented Wyoming Concrete in some matters, and Mr. Monday and his brother, although it's been quite some years ago since I have, and there's nothing that I'm handling or my office is handling now or for the last several years that would create any type of conflict, but I wanted you to be aware of that.
So you don't think he's still mad at you?
He might be.
Good afternoon again. For the record, my name is Jim Fuquay. I represent the applicant, Wyoming Concrete LLC, and with me is Frank DeMondi. It was, again, a small exhibit packet that was submitted that I believe you have in front of you. As Mr. Lank stated, this is an application for a change of zone from AR1 to HI1 heavy industrial. The property is located on the south side of Sussex County Road 380. It contains 10.47 acres. As to its location, the property is located just south of Frankfort. It's just east of Route 113. And on the east side of the site, borders the Conrail Railroad tracks. If you refer to Exhibit B in the exhibit book, that basically shows the Sussex County zoning map. And what you would see there is that to the west of the site, that would be the red-colored area. That is all zoned C1 general commercial up and down both sides of Route 113. Enchanted Meadows is a mobile home park which is located north of the site across Road 380. To the east of the site is the railroad tracks I referred to. And then next to that, again adjacent to this site, which is the area shown in blue, is a 22.9 acre parcel which is already zoned HI1 heavy industrial. And that is operated currently as Hardwood Mills, which is a lumbering operation. The 10-acre parcel before you today currently has an industrial-type use on it. That is a concrete batch plant and supply yard, and that is operated as Pioneer Concrete. That was approved by the Board of Adjustment as a special use exception for 5 years back in 2000. And that type of special exception is only good for 5 years. So that was renewed in 2005 for an additional 5-year extension, and a copy of that Board of Adjustment decision is in the pamphlet that I submitted.
So what we're trying to do is avoid having every 5 years to get these extensions, or are you not allowed to get so many?
No, you can keep getting
keep
it
going
renewed.
On, okay.
Yeah.
It can still be required even if it's heavy industrial.
Okay.
Exhibit D in the packet I submitted just shows some aerial photos. One shows the actual site with the existing batch plant operation and storage yard. The second one shows the site as well as the Hardwood Mills operation adjacent to it, and then the third aerial is just a bird's eye view of the area. There were actually several factors that came together for requesting the change of zone at this time, one of which, of course, is the renewal of the special use exception. It is coming up for renewal for another 5 years, so that would be something that would have to be pursued at this time. But as I mentioned, with the adjacent industrial zoning, the adjacent industrial use and the commercial use in the area, basically it was determined that seeking the industrial zoning was appropriate and in character with the area. The industrial zoning actually permits the concrete batch plant as a permitted use. So that is one of the permitted uses in the industrial zone. And then in addition to that, Mr. DeMondi is planning for the future. The industrial zoning would permit a potential permitted use in the future without the inherent time delay of coming before the council at that time seeking a change of zone, which, as you know, over the past period of time has taken up to 2 years to get that. So it's just basically, from a business point of view, good planning. And then the third factor is that in these current economic conditions, the financing of the business, basically banks like to know that the land is zoned and permits the use that's there. So the bank would be more comfortable if they knew that the underlying zoning of this concrete batch plan actually permits it, as opposed to having to come in every 5 years to seek additional confirmation on that. So basically, the change of zone would provide the security that the lender would be seeking. No change of use is proposed at this time. The site would continue to operate as the existing concrete batch plant and storage area. If and when a change of use is proposed, then that use would have to come back before the Planning and Zoning Commission for a site plan review. So there is future control over what would go there. In addition, if a use in the future was deemed under the language of the code to be potentially hazardous, that would have to go back to the Board of Adjustment for a public hearing. So there are safeguards that are built into the zoning code. So in conclusion, that the site contains 10 acres, it's large enough to accommodate an industrial use, and has sufficient area to provide for buffering or landscaping. In fact, there currently is a fence along the frontage along 380. There's over 800 feet of boundary along the railroad tracks, which could potentially provide for a possible railroad siding if that use was ever deemed appropriate. And it's easy access to Route 113 for vehicle and truck traffic, which, as you know, is the main route in central Sussex County. It's adjacent to existing industrial use, and the adjacent property, as I said, is already zoned industrial. So any use that could go on our site already can go on the site next to us right now. So it's not as if we could bring something into this area that could never be there. As Mr. Lang stated, the Planning and Zoning Commission unanimously recommended approval of the application. They stated detailed findings, which we support their recommendation. And as I said, we believe this is an appropriate request, and we request your approval.
Any questions from the council? Seeing none, is there anyone else in favor of the application? Seeing no one, is there anyone here in opposition? And seeing no one, Mr. Vice President, I think it would be appropriate at this point to close the hearing on this matter.
Okay, we need a motion for that.
And if there's no objection.
Yeah.
Any objections from the council up here tonight? Hearing none, we'll close the hearing.
Yes.
Any questions, comments from council before we vote? I guess you need to read the...
Yes. Mr. Vice President, it's an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agricultural residential district to an H, high, or what is that?
HI1
heavy industrial district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, containing 10.47 acres, more or less.
I'll introduce it.
I make a motion.
We have a motion to approve.
Second, then.
I have a second to approve. Okay, well, I'll have the vote. Mrs. Deaver.
Yes, I vote yes. It's already existing. It's an existing use, and giving it the rezoning makes sense from a business point of view, and also according to what Planning and Zoning found.
Mr. Wilson.
My vote is yes on the recommendation of Planning and Zoning.
Mr. Cole.
Although yes, with the recommendation of Planning and Zoning, it's had a historical use of this activity on the site since 2000, and there has been no problem, so I would support it with a yes vote.
Yes. Phillips.
You're still in charge.
You want to vote?
You didn't hear the public hearing.
I didn't hear the public hearing.
Okay.
He's copping out on you.
Based on recommendation Planning and Zoning, I vote yes. Motion carried 4-0.
Thank you.
That's the same as a no vote.
Yes.
Don't vote. It's a right.
And Mr. President, that's the end of the hearings for today.
Anything else from council? If not, I entertain a motion to adjourn.
Yes.
So moved.
Second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
I'm at a ball game in Laurel. Can I come and sleep?